You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. Today, I have an incredible and well-accoladed guest, Adam Wilson. Adam was once a homeless high school dropout to now a best-selling author and National Police Award-winning investigator. I am super excited and thrilled to have Adam on the show, for he is going to add a lot of value on policing, criminal justice, millennials, and of course, his book, Tactical Reload, The Strategy Shift for Emerging Leaders in Law Enforcement. Adam is a highly decorated 14-year law enforcement veteran who was recognized in 2018 by the National Association of Police Organizations with a national award for producing the top investigation in North Carolina. He has served as a SWAT senior operator and has also collaborated with federal authorities in cases involving public corruption, sexual exploitation of minors, and corrupt organizations. Concurrently, he serves in a street crime unit that safeguards against illegal guns, gangs, and drugs. He was appointed to the North Carolina State Human Relations Commission by former Governor Matt McCrory. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. Go ahead. Tell the audience something that they wouldn't know about you. I know I just shared a lot, but give us a little snapshot of something they wouldn't know.
Something they wouldn't know is I grew up with only having one kidney. And so I wasn't able to play sport like a lot of kids growing up. And I didn't figure out how competitive I was until later on in life. So one kidney and half a bladder. So that's my fun fact.
Really? One kidney, one bladder, and you've been healthy?
No, I wasn't active in playing sports. I didn't get to really play a lot of sports growing up because of the no contact rules that I had. Things have changed for renal care and kidney care. But I figured out later on I wasn't as fragile as I thought. Back in 1982 and 83, it was a lot different medically, right?
So, ooh, yeah.
But everything's good now, healthy, good to go, and very, very active.
Yeah. Tell us about what inspired you to get into law enforcement?
I was kind of floating around a lot. I knew that I liked engaging with people. I was waiting tables, and it was something I was good at, but I didn't see it as a career. You know, nothing against people that make it a career. I just couldn't see it for myself. You know, at the time, I didn't have any insurance. I didn't have any kind of retirement plans. I didn't do well in school initially. I didn't have a lot of skill as far as I didn't know how to work on cars. I didn't know how to. I'm not a handyman type of guy. I can't fix anything, to be honest. But I knew I liked dealing with people. I knew that, you know, my attention span wasn't very good. And so I knew being in policing that you didn't have to sit in front of a computer all day. You're going from call to call, and you're able to get out with and talk with different people, and you had a lot of freedom in that job, and it just seemed like a natural fit for me. And as soon as I started it, it was definitely the right choice. It was definitely my calling.
Yeah, you're protecting citizens.
Yeah, right, absolutely. And so and kind of engaging the community was a big part of it. It's something it's hard to explain until you actually get exposed to it and get that experience of what it's like to deal with the community and be out there every day. It's really hard to put into words. It's one of those things that have a lot of value with the job, even though, you know, a lot of people will attribute value with your salary, but it's one of those intangibles that comes along with policing that you really can't put a price tag on, that it's a very valuable thing, and for most cops, but again, it's hard to understand until you live it.
Yeah, I love that you talked about a value not being associated with a salary, there's no price tag for it, because it's about doing what makes your heart sing.
Right.
It's about what makes you wake up in the morning and very happy to do it. And for you, it was going out in these communities on a daily basis and protecting the rest of us.
Right. And so I just couldn't see myself waking up and just being going to a job where it was I was miserable. You know, I couldn't see myself, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. There's a lot of honor in textile jobs or whatever, you know, job that you may have that's serving other people. But I couldn't see myself doing something where I just dreaded going to work. So policing for me was something I was instantly passionate about and that I look forward to waking up and going to work. I got excited about work. And that is incredibly valuable because yeah. I know many people that just they dread waking up in the morning and they dread having to go to work and it's just misery. Woe is me. And it's just that's not the kind of life I wanted to have. You know, I've had offers to go make more money doing other things, and I just don't think that I would be happy. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times people put too much emphasis on salary as far as what they attribute to success. But I think emotionally enjoying your job and being excited to go in every day means more to you, like to your mental health and just your overall view of the world. It just everything's just better whenever you're enjoying what you do for a living.
Yeah. Viktor Frankl talked about success should not be pursued. It needs to be ensued. It is a byproduct of providing a service. It's a byproduct of surrendering yourself to a greater cause. And for you, it was protecting and serving the community. And I absolutely believe that. And it sounds like so you do as well.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about policing. There's a quote in your book that talk about authentic cops don't need to prove they are tough, but they better heed a mental fitness. Let's talk about that mental fitness that it is required to be a police officer, because especially with the bad media that policing have been getting in the past couple of years. What does that mental toughness look like and how do you achieve it as a police? Because your greater good is to service and protect, but it has backlash.
It does have backlash, and especially since post Ferguson, the police culture has changed. And so what I mean is, you know, 10, 15 years ago, well, let's go a little bit farther back than that. The officers didn't have to deal with the scrutiny and criticisms that they do today. With social media, the news networks, it's just news and information is instantaneous now. And so we've never had to deal with that. You know, an officer involved shooting goes, it makes national news and is spread across the world in a second. And so the landscape of policing has certainly changed. And so for police, and I'll go back a little bit farther. So whenever I talk about authenticity in policing, what you see a lot of times with a new officer is they come in, they have these preconceived notions about what a police officer should be, how they should act. And a lot of times they attribute that demeanor with tough guys, macho, you know, machismo, and you know they want to give that they want to be one of the they want to be one of the guys or the you know or one of the girls and be a part of the group. Everybody wants to feel like they're a part of the group, right?
Right.
And so they come in with these preconceived notions, and I think they a lot of times they come off as they're trying to be tough when a lot of times they're not. There's very very few actual tough people in policing. A lot of the people now, because the selection is so competitive. A lot of people have come in with graduate degrees. They've had these great lives, and that's fine. That's perfect. There's nothing wrong with that. But don't come in and try to act like, you know, you're Mr. Tough Guy when you've never been in a fight. And so a lot of times that peer perception, it can limit somebody's caring about that peer perception can limit that person's development. And so you have to be mentally tough enough to understand that, for one. To have the courage to be yourself, and that we don't need more tough guys, because when you're being fake, it only leads to mistakes, and those mistakes get spread around nationally, and that cycle just perpetuates. And so you have to have the courage to be yourself. And in my three stages of beginning law enforcement or of leadership, authenticity is the first key. If you're not mentally strong enough to be yourself and not let other people's opinions form your own, then you'll never be able to actually lead.
Because ultimately they are servants. They have a servant heart, right? Because they're giving their life, they're putting their life on the line every day.
Sure.
Daily basis, risking their life to serve others. So the notion of that they there's a need to be tough and put in that tough exterior resonates because they're givers. They want to protect. They want to serve. They want to add value to the greater good, to the greater society.
Right.
in general. What other leadership traits? You said authenticity. What other leadership traits do you see a police officer?
So, and well, and going back to that, the you know, there are times when we are required to be tough, right? We have to have that warrior mentality. Whenever I'm getting ready to go into a house and a guy with a gun is inside there, and he said that he's going to try and kill us, I need a tough mentality that's willing to go in there. A lot of times we take more guardian roles than we do warrior mentality roles, whether we're pushing a car out of the road. But there are those moments whenever we do need those guys to be tough, and then we go back to be – but we got to be able to let that go whenever we're dealing with the community at some point. But my second step in my beginning my beginning of leadership for law enforcement, because once you put on the uniform, you go, people are going to look to you for help. And you're going to be in control of situations and scenarios, and you're going to be the leader for your own thinker. If you just regurgitate everybody else's opinions and you have none of your own, You've got to be able to be your own thinker and not let other people's opinions form your own. Be mentally strong enough to hear, but be able to dissect it and digest it and form your own opinion. And that's very, very important, because a lot of times these days we get a lot of our media from fake memes, these false narratives through social media, and we take it as the truth. And a lot of times they're not. Whether it's political or whatever, people hear somebody they like say something, and by gosh, that's the truth. But we got to be able to be strong enough to be our own thinker and decipher through those lanes of just BS and what's real and what's not. And if you can't do that, you're not going to be able to lead. And the third dynamic in that trio is, you have to be able to be able to adjust your levels of cynicism. And what I mean is, in the police culture, there's a lot of cynicism. And sometimes we just got to get stuff off our chest, right? Everybody's got to vent sometimes. But in our world, cynicism, it just breeds for whatever reason. And it may be psychologically that's the way a lot of cops have to deal with things. But you have to be able to recognize your level of influence whenever you're being cynical.
How do you prevent that? I mean, you wake up every day and you see the crime, you deal with the criminals. How do you not get jaded after a while?
And you will. I can speak for myself that there is no doubt, unequivocally, that I'm a different person than the day I started. Now, I'm sure some of that is attributed to maturity and just, you know, getting older. But the job does change you. And I think, I don't know if there's a magic pill we can take, because I think it's going to happen regardless. And I think it kind of gets biological in a way, because our brains aren't wired to do what police and first responders do. I mean, you have most people, an accountant, you know, they don't have multiple adrenaline dumps every single day.
They're not activating their flight as much as you are, fight or flight.
Right. So, you know, in a moment's notice, we're going to an armed robbery.
Yeah.
Right. Just a few minutes later, we're doing something that's really low priority, like taking a minor wreck. Then all of a sudden we're going to a shooting call and that adrenaline's back up. Next thing you know, somebody needs us to push their car out of the road. And it's like that every day, up and down. And I think psychologically it starts to weigh on you, and people do become, Your views do get a little bit jaded, and you get that once you begin that negative talk, that cynical talk, that just becomes the way you communicate. And I don't think people realize that. And I think just understanding that and recognizing it would be very beneficial, because I think if you can recognize that, oh my gosh, all I do is kind of start putting yourself in check, you can start reversing that trend. Because once you start communicating negatively all the time, your brain, that's literally the way that you will end up communicating all the time. And it's just that influence from that. So let's say you have a very salty veteran, a 20-year veteran, or me. Let's say you have me, and I walk in, and these young guys and women are looking at me and watching the way I do things, what I say, because they're watching my patterns of behavior, because they're wanting to be a part of the group. They're wanting to be accepted. So they're going to watch what the veterans do and how they act, and perceive that as, hey, that's the way I'm supposed to act. And so if I'm always being negative, if I'm always being cynical, then they're going to perceive that as that's the way they're supposed to be. And then the cycle just continues. People don't realize the amount of influence that we have. We have influence over everybody that we come into contact with. Now, we can make a decision to make it a negative contact, a negative influence, or we can make it a positive one.
Mm.
Now, I'm not saying that I'm perfect, and I don't catch myself all the time saying negative stuff or getting caught up in that cynical culture. But what I do know is that I understand it. I know I do it, and I'm trying to catch myself and keep from having that influence on others.
Right. And I love that you mentioned the psychological aspect of it. And I know there is something you are very versed in, is how do mandatory psychological tests for cops could remove the shame of vulnerability and decrease suicide?
For most police, and I can't say what it's like for, you know, California or Minnesota or New York, but I know for here in North Carolina, typically part of the hiring process at the onset is you'll go through certain levels of, you know, your application, your interview. You'll go through a polygraph. Sometimes some agencies do them, some don't. You'll go through a psychological test at the beginning of your career. Now, the problem is a lot of these tests are done before you've ever been exposed to the rigors of the job. You haven't been exposed to really bad wreck, dead bodies, you know, all these adrenaline dumps. So people are looking at your essay before you've really wrote anything on the paper.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, unless you're involved in an officer involved shooting, you won't go back to a psychiatrist or anybody to talk to somebody unless you volunteer to do so. But a lot of times, again, going back to that tough guy exterior, cops don't want to ask for help and they just think that they're okay. And a lot of times they're not. There's PTSD, for instance. A lot of times people associate that with these major events overseas, you know, IEDs blowing up on the roadside. And absolutely, those events will cause PTSD and mental health issues. But for police, I think it's not necessarily, and we do have those big events, but they're not as common. Over the past 15 years, had a lot of adrenaline dumps. I've been in a lot of sketchy situations. Now, collectively, that starts to weigh on a person. 20 years of those, maybe not big events, but small adrenaline dumps and events start to collect, and it just weighs on the mental health of people, but people don't realize it until it's too late. If we had some type of just check-in, some type of check-in with a psychiatrist or something, just to make sure everything's running smooth, right? Or we got our cortisol checked. We can actually, like, just like we check our cholesterol, we can test our stress hormones. We can see numbers and we can literally look at somebody if we have a baseline and see how much is elevated and see if they're getting to a point where, oof, you know, they're getting to a kind of a burnout phase. They're getting to a point where, you know, they're not doing well. We may need to pull the reins back. Now, how we do that, that's an entirely different animal. But I do think that the technology is there. And I think that the awareness is becoming greater across the country for the mental health of first responders. So I'm really hopeful that we will be able to have a better handle on it. And because right now, you know, the divorce rates are higher in law enforcement than other professions. Our suicide rates are higher. Alcoholism's higher. Substance abuse in general is higher. We have a shorter life expectancy after retirement than anybody else.
Due to all these, the suicide thoughts and also just the stress and not being able to check in, because it's not just the cops. I know your job is rigorous and being a police is rigorous. And that's why I respect and honor every policeman and thank them for their service. But even as a civilian, a regular person like myself, there is that need to check in to see, is everything going correctly? Because we are under a lot of stress with this era, with information overload.
Oh, yeah.
And the amount of stress that we're under, adrenal fatigue is real. It's a thing. And it goes undiagnosed every year. And so to be able to check in and have some psychologists on call is beneficial for health.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have what we use here is an employee assistance program. And it basically just it means that, you know, we have the availability of the option to reach out and make an appointment and speak to someone. But, you know, I think that it's a very underutilized resource, because a lot of, you know, we may get physicals every year and it's mandated, but a lot of people, they get real nervous about talking to somebody because they think that if they say the wrong thing, you know, are they going to take my gun? Are they going to take my career away from me? I don't want to. So I'm just going to, you know what, I'm just going to put it on the back burner and just not worry about it. And, you know, I'll be okay. And so a lot of it's just getting away from the stereotypes and what it's really about. And so it just bringing awareness to police and kind of instilling, utilizing, you know, the new technology as we move forward in the future, because everything evolves, even this. And so I think that will be a big benefit in the coming years. And I'm hoping that could help reduce, you know, mistakes made in the field. And at the same time, you know, see divorce rates drop, see suicide yeah. rates drop, and see that life expectancy, you know, start to rise again. Cause I don't want to die early. You know, I want to live a happy retirement with my wife.
I agree. Mandatory psychological tests will be a good start. It's taboo still in some societies, in some places. It's tabooed in some families, and it shouldn't sure. be. It should be, just like you say, it's getting a checkup on a weekly basis. You're checking on your mental health.
Right.
I studied psychology, and I know PTSD can stifle your growth. You can feel like you're in a cage, and depression. It's common. And to know, being aware of it and know that this is happening and to be able to gain control and be able to get help. And it's okay to ask for help.
Right.
So I love that the force makes it a mandatory aspect of the application process and ongoing while you are serving. Let's shift gears really quick and talk about millennial entitlement and impatience.
Well, I think for millennials, you know, I'm one of the older millennials, right? So I am right there on the edge. And I think millennials now have a negative connotation associated with us. Even the kids that's in school now in college, you know, they're getting called millennials, and they're in a completely different generation. But they see the older generation see these kids doing something, you know, that they consider, you know, just being young and stupid, and they call them millennials because the term millennial has become negative. Even so, for people in my generation, we've even taken it upon ourselves to make these subcategories to try to get away from the millennial title. And so but I think that's completely wrong. We are what we are. You either make it better or you don't. I don't think that, you know, have millennials grown up differently than past generations? Of course. What generation hasn't? You know, our grandparents, if they would have grown up with social media in their lives, you know, I'm sure they did some stupid stuff when they were younger, right? I'm sure that their parents thought they were crazy. And so I don't think that millennials are, there's certainly some entitlements there, but I don't think we are as lazy and buffoons as people like to make us out to be.
I know there's a lot of entrepreneurs, millennials. We have 21-year-olds, some 25-year-olds starting businesses and being successful at it. We are hardworking. I agree.
Absolutely. And people look at the few millennials they see on TV, and, you know, we're kind of labeled across the board, kind of like police, right? You have one officer involved shooting, and everybody's coming out talking about how bad the police are. And that's really not the case. The numbers are significant.
Skewed.
Are completely skewed. They're nowhere near what people try to make it out to be. There's no epidemic of police, and millennial cops kind of get that double negative, you know. And so I think that, you know, we got to start stepping up, and kind of for millennials, millennials have to start stepping up because we're about to be thrust into a lot of leadership roles, whether we like it or not. You know, I'm mid career, and so people my age, of the older millennials, are getting ready to start stepping into, you know, places of authority, and we've got to be ready to do that. We've got to be able to lead, and
that's where your leadership skills come in, with being authentic and forming your own opinion and managing your cynicism and understanding that you are impacting lives. You are, every encounter and engagement you are making on the streets, you have the opportunity to choose whether it's a positive one or a negative one. And I think that's huge.
And I think, sure, no, right. And I'm a firm believer that before you're ever given authority, you're especially in law enforcement. But I think this could be, anybody could use this advice, and look at yourself as a leader, whether it's just kind of you're the unspoken leader of a group or whatever. You know, whenever you're given that authority and you're already in that mindset, you're already so much farther ahead of the game. People wait. And I think it's a huge mistake that people wait until they're given the authority to then they want to become a leader. No. That's a terrible mind.
It's backwards thinking.
Because once you're given that authority, it's almost just a catalyst for you should have already been a leader. It's just giving you a platform to kind of put those things into action.
Yeah, I agree. Leaders are typically easier to get along with. They're not easier to get along with because they're leaders. They're leaders because they were already easy to get along with. They respected people. They understood themselves and they understood how to tap into other people's, or they're just aware of themselves a lot more.
Right. And you mentioned earlier kind of police being servants. And I think that's the best place from. I think a chief in an organization should be the biggest servant there. I think you leave from a place of servanthood, not from a place of authority or a place where you're just, you know, you're out for a title. It's just all ego. And I think that translates into your organization, what kind of leader you are. If you're there for the right reasons and you understand that, you know, it's not a matter of just ego and people stroking your ego, telling you how great you are and just kissing up all the time. If you're really there for your people, then I think that an organization can be taken to a completely different level just from that one person at the top of the food chain.
I wrote a dissertation on narcissistic leaders, and it would embody those traits that egotistic and just vanity, and also just using their power for just the worst.
Absolutely. Sure.
And it trickles down. It trickles down to the cadets. It trickles down to the leadership and everyone. The whole area, the whole department, though, it becomes toxic because of this one person.
Absolutely. 100%.
Tell me about, you had a very interesting thought. You said respect people who commit crimes as a humane strategy for building trust. What do you mean by that?
One of the stories I use in the book is I was kind of new at the department I'm at now. And one of those guys that he wanted to be tough. He was trying to, you know, he wanted peer perception. He wanted that acceptance from everybody. He was not some tough guy by no means. He went to a great school. He was the kind of guy that never been in a fight, nothing like that. So I go into the jail. And I've got a guy under arrest, right? I've got a guy that I caught him selling dope, selling crack. He's going to jail. Rapport, talk to him. You know, hopefully maybe I can flip this guy. He can tell me where his source is. And here comes this guy, this other cop, and he wants to berate my prisoner to try to get some laughs from the other people sitting around because there were some other cops, there were some other prisoners. So he comes and he tells everybody, and I'll quote it if you don't mind. He says, "Man, this guy smells like shit," and he starts talking. He starts making fun of my prisoner, and then the prisoner just pretty much looks at me and is like, "I ain't saying nothing. I'm done." Because that's all he had to. That's the only little bit of control that he information, and he controlled that information by whether he gave it to me or not.
Right, and he was just disrespected.
He was, and so this kid. This cop who was he got fired, but you know he just wanted he was trying to get some laughs. He didn't care about the prisoner. He didn't care about my case. He didn't care about anything. He was completely disrespectful. But and like I tell a lot of the younger guys, once the cuffs are on, we've won. It's over with. There's no reason if people want to yell and cuss and cuss us out, fine. We get used to that. My skin's pretty thick now. You become pretty calloused as an officer to people just screaming and cussing at you when they're mad and going to jail. It is what it is. But there's no reason for the back. But he felt the need to always want to try to appear like some kind of tough guy and try to get some laughs. And he cared about that peer perception more than he cared about the person in there. And I'm not saying that I'm some touchy-feely, you know, give everybody hugs by no means. But there is a level of respect that you should give someone after they're arrested. Especially if you're trying to build a some type of relationship with them, even if it is a confidential source and a detective or whatever, there should be a level of respect. And you're never going to get any information any legitimate information if you can't build some type of rapport there. And by berating people and talking down to them and being condescending, it just keeps on perpetuating that cycle in the community that the police are bad.
Right.
And it's just not the case. And so kind of circling back, that's kind of what I go into with a lot of the new guys is like, look, you know, yeah, I know that you got to be his best friend, but once you get the cuffs on, it's over with. Leave it alone. Don't try to prove something to somebody that because he'll probably beat you senseless because he's grown up in nothing but poverty, nothing but gang life. He fights all the time. He has nothing. Car at 16, college paid for. Like, and you're going to talk trash to this guy because he's in handcuffs. That's a terrible decision.
Yeah. And I think the human, you dehumanize people, you lose a standard there. And as a official, as a person who's in uniform and already in charge, there is no need for that extra negative or putting somebody down because we are all human. We are all people and everyone deserves respect. And I'm so happy to hear that this training is taking place because it will minimize the negative connotation that police officers and policing has right now.
Hopefully so.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I didn't look at it that way. When I read the quote from the book, I wasn't sure what it meant. And the fact when you do explain it, it makes perfect sense to respect other people regardless of where they're at, what state they're at, because it's our human right.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
I want you to share with us your morning routine because you have to be physically fit to be a police officer, to work in law enforcement, and also mentally fit as well. How do you do that? How do you prep yourself every morning? How do you get up, dress up, and show up to do what you do?
Well, first things first, you've got to get out of bed. You've got to get out of bed. There's so many people that hit the snooze. Honest to God, I try to sleep as little as I can. I try, and that's a terrible habit. But the one resource that we all have, the most precious resource we all have that we lose every second is time. And so you have to quit wasting time by trying to stay in a comfortable bed, get up, get moving. So that's rule number one. I try, as soon as I wake up, my head starts spinning and I'm like, I got to do this. I got to do that. Somebody's probably outworking me. And I'm never going to be the most talented or smartest person in the room. But the one thing that I control is my level of work. And this is pretty standard for me is I go straight to the coffee. I've got coffee preset, pre-made, and I go ahead and get my cup poured. And I'm not the kind of person, I'm not a morning workouter. I definitely work out daily, but I just cannot do it in the morning. Because the mornings for me, I reserve as almost a time, like you mentioned before we started recording that, you kind of used your morning for a little bit of
meditation, running.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, exactly. I may not be running, but I like to get up. I read a little bit. I have my coffee and it's just very, very quiet. It's kind of my calm before the storm because once I'm off to the races, it's on. Even if I'm on a group trip, like let's say I'm on a family vacation, I like to be the first one. I actually wake up a lot of times earlier than I normally would because I like. Definitely got that only child syndrome where I need to get recharged and be by myself. And a lot of times I use that morning time to do that. And so I like to, a lot of times I'll spend just a few minutes reading. Every once in a while, I'll go straight to the social media and look at the craziness that went on that night before or whatever. But a lot of times I like to read for a little while.
What do you read?
Oh my gosh. I read a lot of history books. I read a lot of self-help and leadership books. I read a lot of political history, self-help and leadership are kind of my go-tos. A couple of my favorite books, just to give these guys a shout out, was Jocko Willink and Leif Babin's The Dichotomy of Leadership and Extreme Ownership. Those are two incredible books if you ever get a chance to look up a couple if any of your listeners are looking for a new book with a lot of great stories and great lessons and with a lot of value. I highly recommend those books. And that kind of gets me in my work mode when I read a lot of that stuff. It kind of gets me started, gets me motivated a little bit, and it kind of fires me up. So if I have to go to my police job, my real job, then at that point I'm changing into my uniform and I'm hitting the door and I'm getting guys on the road. But if I'm off, such as today or yesterday, then the first thing I do is after my little wake up meditation session, I'm on the keyboard. I'm typing. I'm creating some kind of content. I'm staying creative. And that's kind of my thing. And so what I do is I try to get at minimum, whatever project I'm working on, I try to get at least 2 hours in.
Mm-hmm. Time blocking.
So I try to get at least 2 hours in, because if I can get to at least two hours of solid work on anything, is pretty good time. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. But you can get a lot done in 2 hours. And so if I'm working on my book, or if I'm working on an article, I'm getting ready to start my own podcast soon. So if I'm working on any of that stuff, then I will put in 2 hours, usually minimum, before I do anything else, because whatever else comes up in the day, I at least got those 2 hours of solid work in. So I did something productive that day. And that's pretty much it. I mean, there's some different instances as far, you know, a lot of times I'll wake up in the middle of the night with something in my head, and I'm so scared that I'm going to lose that idea or that sentence or that paragraph that I just wake up. And there's been many a nights where I wake up at 3 a.m. and I get to my computer and I'm just typing. And by the time I get done, well, it's time to get up anyway.
Yeah, that's called your creative juices flowing. The same thing happened to me, especially if you're in the business of creating content. Like you say, you put 2 hours in the morning to actually get content done. My time to wake up is about 3:30, 3:35. Between that time frame, I am like, I jump up. I'm alert. It could have been, I've been sleeping for an hour. I've been sleeping for 3 hours. It doesn't matter. And I'm up with this great idea. And that's why I keep a journal by my bedside to actually document that, just as you do.
Right. No, exactly. So before I go to bed, I make sure my laptop is charged and it's right there beside me in case I need to roll over, grab it and get to typing before I forget something. Because if I go back to sleep, I'll wake back up and I can't remember what I was thinking about the night before. And so that can be aggravating.
Yeah. So your morning routine consists of getting up early, getting out of bed once, not hitting the snooze button. I love that you read in the morning, because it's crucial to stimulate the mind mentally with something positive, with something inspiring. And for you, that's leadership. That is self-help. That is looking at some politics stuff as well. And then it really is the time for you to recharge, as it is for me as well. It's before letting the world end. It's taking that time to actually get connected with yourself and thinking about what the day will look like and how you're going to perform, how you're going to show up in the day in every situation.
Exactly. And that's a good point of getting your mind energized and getting inspired and getting motivated. Everybody, you know, I think a lot of people wake up and they just lay in bed and look at their social media, and there's not very much on social media that really gets me inspired. that gets me inspired. And, you know, there's some kind of engaging your mind, and then you kind of get you set up for the day whenever you're reading something, some motivational stuff and some self-help and working. And those 2 hours are just kind of my minimum. If I get the chance to do another 2 hours later in the day, which sometimes it happens, that's either, you know, even better. But that's kind of a bonus. But those 2 hours, that's my thing.
And that is fantastic. And it's clear. That's the evidence to you being successful and being a 20-year veteran and doing all the work that you continuously do and working as a law enforcement. It's no easy task, and you have mastered it. You're mentally fit and physically fit for it. And I'm so honored to have heard your story. And so thank you so much for coming on the show. Tell us, how can our audience connect with you and get the hold of your book?
Sure. So the book is on Amazon. The name of the book is Tactics for Emerging Leaders in Law Enforcement. But to be honest, the book can be the lessons in the book. There's a lot of value for it is geared towards law enforcement because that's my expertise. But the lessons in the book can be applied anywhere. And you can find that on Amazon. You can also find a link to the book on my website, www.adamlwilson.com. You can find me on Facebook, you just Adam Wilson, and Instagram, Adam Wilson 02 is my Instagram handle, and also on LinkedIn.
Well, you've heard it here first, Morning Enthusiasts. This is Adam Wilson, and his book is not just for individuals in the police force or looking to get into law enforcement, but for everybody who wishes to be a leader in their life, in their work. And he talks about authenticity, about being real, because being fake leads to mistakes. I love that that quote from you, Adam, because that is very true. Another leadership trait is to form your own opinion. Read once, read twice, and form your own opinion. Don't take things at face value, because there's so much information out there, and it's easy to post information. Bloggers, it's easy to see all that out there, but you gotta be knowledgeable. Learn. Make sure you spend the time to learn enough so that you can form your own opinion about ideas and not take anyone else's as your own. The third one is cynicism. Just being mindful of those thoughts, those rancid thoughts that causes you to be jaded, but also having that freedom, that liberated mind to choose, knowing that is your will. That is the choice you have, is to make that decision every day to know how you are going to impact the people you engage with or interact with throughout the day. I agree, Adam, is applicable across the board in business, in life, in school, in every area of life. I love the notion. Thank you for sharing about the mandatory psychological tests that took on, and talking about millennials being thrust into leadership position in the next few years. And there's a need to be authentic. There's a need to, again, follow the leadership traits that you mentioned. So, Adam, thank you so much for coming to the show. Your morning routine is robust, and it's evident as you are very successful. And we thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. That was a lot of fun.
My pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
All right, morning enthusiasts, it's time to listen up. As you know, I am a big fan of books. I strongly believe you gotta feed your mind. I personally read over 50 books a year. How, you may ask? I listen. I listen to audiobooks, the quickest and fastest way to consume content. Audible and I are offering you a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/BMR ever to get yours. It's that simple. Sign up and I will see you at the top of your best morning routine ever. Stay blessed.
Well, all right, morning enthusiasts, that's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.